As you focus on the present moment, remember that you're not simply watching what's happening. You're playing a role. The Buddha talks about three kinds of fabrication, and we're engaged in all three as we put the present moment together. There's bodily fabrication, the breath. Verbal fabrication, directed thought and evaluation, how you talk to yourself, focusing on a topic, making comments, asking questions. And then mental fabrication, your perceptions and feelings. And as John Lee would point out, it's the verbal fabrications that are real troublemakers. The way we talk to ourselves can create a lot of problems in the present moment, depending on the kind of commentary we're making. So this is an important part of the meditation, is talking to yourself in a new way. Of course, it builds on right speech. Think about the Buddha's recommendations for how he would gauge his speech. One, it had to be true. Two, it had to be beneficial. And three, it had to be the right time and right place to be harsh, the right time and right place to be gentle. Three tests for your speech to pass. That's more than a lot of us apply to our own speech. A thought occurs to the mind, and it comes right out. We don't have a vow of silence around the monastery here. A lot of people just take that as free license to speak whatever they want to speak about. But you should regard it as an opportunity to practice right speech. When you open your mouth to talk, ask yourself, what is your motive? Is it really going to be beneficial for the listeners, or is it you're just showing off your knowledge or showing off your opinions? If you really think about your speech before you say it, you find that it becomes a lot more effective, and then it gets a lot easier to speak to yourself in the right way as you sit down to meditate. Because again, as you're focusing on the breath, you want your speech to be true. You really are making true comments about how the breath is going, where it's comfortable, where it's not. You want it to be beneficial. You're trying to get the mind to settle down. Any speech beyond that is not really necessary. We're trying to speak in ways that lead the mind to a place where it doesn't have to speak. As for whether you're going to be gentle with yourself or more harsh with yourself as you speak, that depends on how you read your own mind, how well you respond to harsh speech, how well you respond to gentle speech. This is something you have to pay attention to. Because then the Buddha talks about directed thought and evaluation as one of the factors of jhana. It's not just an unfortunate part of the mind that can't settle down yet. You're using the speech to get things comfortable inside, get the mind to be happy to be with the object, adjust the mind. Adjusting the object means adjusting whether it's going to be long or short, the breath, fast or slow, heavy, light, deep, shallow, where you're going to focus, which part of the breath you're going to be most sensitive to, and then how to allow that comfortable breath to spread through the body. You can't force it. If you force it, it turns uncomfortable. You have to think of it flowing smoothly. This is where some mental fabrication comes in, as you work with the perceptions that you have how the breath flows. See, what way of perceiving the breath, what way of picturing the breath to yourself gives good results. That's adjusting the object, adjusting the mind. He's asking yourself, What is your attitude toward the meditation right now? What kind of moods are you bringing in from the day? And you're trying to counteract them. Here again, you use directed thought and evaluation. If you're irritated about something that happened during the day, well, how can you talk to yourself in a way that allows you to put it down? If you're irritated about people around you, okay, how can you think in ways that remind you, okay, you're the group of people who want to meditate. They may not be the best people, they may not be ideal companions, but the values are the same. So it's good to be with people like this. To learn how to talk to yourself, that's an important part of the meditation. We think that meditation often is about not thinking, and there will be stages where thinking is really minimal. All you need is just a perception to hold you in place. But to get there, you have to think in the right way, because we bring narratives in from the day. We bring attitudes in from the day. They may be helpful, they may be not. If they're not helpful, you have to counteract them. The Johns and Thailand often talk about surveying your mind. Is it leading to the future? Is it leading to the past? Is it leading toward things you like or things you don't like? What can you do so that it doesn't lean, so that it's sitting straight up? So you have to make a survey like this for the mind to be willing to settle down. Remember, you've got a whole committee in there, so you have to talk to them, convince them that this is a good place to stay. You can do part of that with making the breath comfortable. But that's not going to be enough. You have to keep reminding yourself of why it's important to train the mind. We all look for happiness, and yet we're causing suffering by our actions. We want to know why. There's some ignorance there. So you have to get the mind still so you can see where its ignorance is. And as the Buddha pointed out, the suffering of the mind is not just feeling of pain. It's the clinging. It's something you do, and you cling because you like certain things. So we're suffering because of our likes. So you have to examine them. That requires that the mind be stable and be still in the present moment with a sense of well-being. So it's able to step back. Engage these things. We like our lust. We like our anger. We like our delusion. All our opinions about things that have nothing to do with putting an end to suffering. A lot of that the Buddha would class as ignorance, a thicket of views. And yet we like them. So you have to examine why. And sometimes the why is not as obvious as you might think. The Buddha talks about pinpointing where your craving is focused. You might say that you crave another person, but do you actually crave the other person, or do you crave a perception about the other person? Or some ways you have of thinking about the other person, or other associations that have nothing to do with the person, or only a tangential connection with the person. If you're angry about something, are you really angry about that, or is it related to something else you're more angry about? Or do you simply enjoy being angry? There's a certain rush that comes with anger. A sense of power. And you've been feeling hemmed in, powerless. Okay, this gives you an opportunity to exercise a little power. At least that's what the mind says. Your sense of shame, your sense of compunction get thrown out the window. And a lot of things that you would ordinarily not do when you're in your right mind. All of a sudden seem fair play, fair game. So when we say that we like being angry, exactly what is it about the anger that you find attractive? You've got to look into that. It may not always be the same thing every time you're angry. When I was teaching in Portland last week, one of the questions came up, is it enough to just deal with anger as a general phenomenon? Or do you have to get to the specifics? If you don't get to the specifics, you don't see exactly where your craving is located. And the specifics are just there. What's the allure? What are the drawbacks? How can you develop a sense of dispassion? Because that's what we're aiming for. And for a lot of us, the word dispassion doesn't sound all that comfortable, all that appealing. But think of it growing up. You had some childish games that you like to play, and then you realize there's not much there. And you're better off just not getting involved in the games. Well, lust is a kind of game. It's a childish game. Anger is a childish game. All our delusions are childish games. Well, you can see them that way. And you can see that dispassion is actually something positive, because the Buddha always relates dispassion to escape, freedom, being unfettered. We tie ourselves down to things that we like. And then we complain because we're constrained. But then we don't like the idea of leaving those things. The mind is fighting itself. So the mind needs to be still to figure these things out. So this is why we think in ways and breathe in ways, talk to ourselves in ways, to get things to settle down. Sometimes it's easy. You sit down, the world seems to go away, and you're right here. Other times it requires a lot of talking. And don't measure your meditation by how quiet it is, because sometimes some really important things have to require that you talk to yourself well, talk to yourself thoroughly, turn over a lot of stones, turn over a lot of things to see what's underneath. But if you're getting toward understanding, and it's the kind of understanding that frees you from the things that you tie yourself down with, then it's all to the good. So even though John Lee says our habit of talking to ourselves can be a big problem, it's also part of the solution. So think of your use of language as a skill that you have to master, and it's not just being able to talk a lot. As the Buddha says, the ability to talk a lot doesn't mean you're wise. But talk to yourself in ways that are true and beneficial and timely. And you take this troublemaker and turn it into part of the path.